Going into our last hour of open lines, maybe it's past like reading Tolstoy for you, but this has just flown by, and I'm loving every minute of it. So let's go into our last hour of open lines. We'll get to as many people as we can here coming up. Wanted to throw in a quick follow-up for that last call. You heard a guy calling from, I believe he said it was closer to north central Arkansas. He talked about something that he saw that had crawled out of a swamp. It was sort of a man beast. And I didn't have time to get into it before the top of the hour, so I thought I'd just hold him off here. So if you're listening, this sounds a lot like the Fouque monster. I believe that's how it's pronounced. I have to be very careful. F-O-U-K-E. This is one of those hominid reports that we've heard about for a couple of decades. I don't know how far back goes, to the Civil War, maybe, but it grew in popularity probably in the 60s and 70s, and there'd been a movie or two, maybe some made-for-TV movie or a semi-doc on it or something, but it's an interesting story, but it's in more in the Texarkana part of Arkansas, and I think I don't know if they still do studies on it, but there was one professor or a group of graduate students that had sort of been scouring the swamps of Texarkana looking for evidence of this monster. And there had been some news stories that had gotten some legitimate sort of mainstream press coverage. And I don't know. It's a sort of an ape-like creature, the same kind of skunk ape report that we hear out of Florida. And I've never heard anything from that part of Arkansas, but I don't know Arkansas very well. So maybe there's an easy corridor between those two parts, and or there's just more of these man creatures out there than we know of. But keep an eye on them. You never know what you're going to see, and it could turn anybody into a believer. What do you want to take us to coming up next? We'll find out on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, somebody just emailed, a friend of mine just emailed me and said the movies I was trying to think of were The Legend of Boggy Creek. That was the semi-documentary made about this creature in the Arkansas swamps. And that there was a sequel to that called Return to Boggy Creek that starred Dawn Wells, otherwise known as Marianne from Gilligan's Island. And I've seen that movie. I don't think I saw the first one, but I know I saw the second one with Dawn Wells. Because she's hot, and it was okay. It was kind of stupid actually, but sort of a Samuel Z. Arkoff movie. I believe I saw it in a drive-in, but that's what stuck with me. There might be more on the web on that. Go take a look on the Boggy Creek Swamp Monster. If you're that security guard who gave us a call, and be careful out there. Tony is on a wild card line in Washington State on Coast to Coast AM. Tony. Is that you, Tony? Tony One? Can you hear me okay? All right. Sorry about that. Tony, we gave you a shot. Just want to make sure it wasn't me on my end because I sometimes screw up calls. Jason in Palm Springs.
Yes. I wanted to comment on earlier there was some comment about the military. And last week, up in the Morongo Basin, that would be Joshua Tree, Yucca Valley, 29 Palms, they did DUI checks on the road, and it was a joint effort of the armed military Marines from the 29 Palms military base and the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Office. And so we were confronted with the sheriffs, and we were confronted with armed military police when we were stopped.
What were they doing?
Doing DUI checks.
The military was doing a DUI check.
Along with the San Bernardino Sheriff's Department.
Yes. Oh, wait. And were they MPs?
They were armed military.
No, I get that. But were they MPs? Were they military police? Were they police from a nearby military base assigned to do DUI work?
No. They were regular Marine uniformed and armed.
No, I know. I get that. I appreciate that. No, the reason I say that is my brother worked for a while. I have a police officer brother, was former police officer, and he worked on a military base, and they used to do these joint operations with local police because some of the guys in the base were out doing these crimes and stuff, so they were getting involved. But that's interesting, Jason. I appreciate that, and I will keep an eye on that. Got to keep an eye on that. Can't violate the Constitution. Wyatt is in Norfolk, Virginia on Coast to Coast AM. Wyatt?
Good morning, Ian.
Open lines. Where are you going to go?
You had a caller a little while ago that was talking about hydrogen and the technology that goes with that. And I kind of want to pose a question or a thought for the American public. I'm a subcontractor for the government. I work on U.S. Navy vessels. Now, on U.S. Navy submarines, they have a machine that makes oxygen. And do you know what the byproduct of this machine is? Hydrogen.
Hydrogen, sure.
And they dump it right over the side of the submarine.
Hmm. So if they're making oxygen, then they could use that, recycle the byproduct of that, and use that to make fuel, which then they could use the fuel to generate the machine that makes the oxygen, that makes the byproduct, that makes the fuel, that makes the oxygen. We might have our first perpetual motion machine.
Well, I don't know if a perpetual motion machine is right, but I do know that H2O is what they use to make oxygen with. And the byproduct of that is hydrogen. And all they do with that is dump it right over the side. So obviously the government has this technology, but they don't release it to the public.
Yeah, that's wrong then. If it's out there, it should be. Thanks. Appreciate that. Let's do Chris on Coast to Coast AM, south of Chicago. Chris?
Yes, sir, Ian. First of all, I wanted to tell you, man, I love you as a host. You're awesome. And I love this opportunity to pick your brain. I just had two quick things here. Number one, have you read the work of Christopher Hitchens and the book God Is Not Great?
I have. I'm very familiar with Christopher Hitchens. I haven't read that book. No, I've heard about it, though. Yeah, he's very anti-religion, and he's scathing in his wit and wisdom.
He is indeed, and I found it to be a very convincing argument he made in that book. I highly recommend it, just in an objective way, just to take
convincing
a read
of what.
That religion can sometimes poison situations and civilizations.
Oh please. If that's his conclusion, I'd say that should have been his premise. I mean, there's no doubt that religion has hurt many situations, civilizations, caused death to millions, but that's because religion, like anything, like science, like literature, like art, like technology, is lived in the hands of humans. And humans will always find cheap excuses for doing awful things. And religion is often one of those things. And
definitely. And it's something that he relishes pointing out at each and every turn in the book. The other thing was, I just wondered, have you ever had a last temptation of Christ kind of moment where in your life something maybe happens to you that it makes you wonder a couple of years down the line, are all these good things really happening to me, or are they a result of some dream I'm having just before this traumatic experience would have killed you?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because for people who were poisoned away from seeing Last Temptation of Christ, with all the publicity and all of this stigma that was attached to that movie, they're going to miss the nuance of that, and that's a really interesting claim that perhaps we think of our lives, if we could really see the macro picture of our lives, we might see we're on a very different trajectory than we actually are, and that Christ had this moment of reflection of what his life would have been like had he made other choices, including it was marriage to Mary Magdalene and a child and the whole bit, right, Chris?
Right. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and I've had a couple of kids, and I know what a joy they are, and I know that if I'd made different decisions back when I was a youth, I guess, I never would have come to this point. As a matter of fact, I was staring down the barrel of a gun at one point, and sometimes I think, you know, should I really be here? Am I really here? I mean, I should have died at that point, you know?
Well, I think anytime you're staring down the barrel of a gun, that is the exact question you ought to be asking yourself, is how did I end up here? I think you're only a smart guy. It doesn't take Christopher Hitchens to ask, why am I here? What happened? What bad decisions were I making? You know, but I think that I'll take it out of the religious realm, because I've never had that experience religiously. But I think I've asked myself this a lot, and I've imagined, if I had been born in a Muslim country, would I be a Muslim? If I were born in a country that was that, you know, where the state religion was atheism, you know, like the Soviet Union was, would I have been an atheist? Am I only what I am because I'm the sum total of my cultural and familial influences, or would I have been mysteriously drawn to the faith that inspires me now? And I don't know that I can ever answer that, you know, and I think
no one really can. I don't think. I think it's just like behavior, and you wonder why serial killers do what they do. It's a product of all kinds of things coming together and culminating into this one product in the end. I think that's my opinion, Ian.
Well, I think that's totally fair. I would add that there's a lot of people who listen to Coast to Coast who write who don't think I'm a particularly good Christian, and I'm a poor excuse for an ordained cleric. And can I just say, then that's where I come to. I think if I had been born in a Muslim country, I probably would have been a crappy Muslim. And if I had been born in an atheist country, I would have been a really lousy atheist. So maybe that's the thread that pulls them all together. And thank you, Chris. Drive carefully. Let's go to Greg is in Mesa, Arizona on Coast to Coast. Greg?
Hi, Ian. Not only are you the most skeptical Coast to Coast host, you are the most religious Coast to Coast host. Now, I'd like to ask
try to you, sort those two things out. Right, exactly.
It works. And I want to hear you interview a Bible preacher named Harold Camping, like you go camping in the woods. He's been studying the Bible for 50 years, and he's a very enigmatic radio host of his own show, and I think it would be perfect for your religious show.
What's his specialty?
Well, he just says that the world's going to end in 2012, and that's not the real interesting thing of what he does. You know, he just goes into every little bit of the Bible, and he says, well, this is what's going on here, you know, and it's because of him that I've started to read the Bible, and I've really...
That's good.
Become involved with, like, you know, Jonah, and it's just so interesting the way the Bible, it's like, okay, Jonah starts out, you know, I always heard about the whale, but it starts out, okay, God wants him to go, you know, deal with...
To Nineveh.
Yeah, Nineveh. He wants to go have him deal with a group of people, but he disobeys God, you know, he charters a boat, the boat becomes in a big storm, and it's like, you know, this guy himself is disobeying God, but yet God wants him to go deal with these people who are disobedient to him. So, I mean, what's going on there?
Well, first of all, interesting thought. I mean, I love the story of Jonah, the story of a wayward prophet and all of the things that happen. I also love how the story ends, which is totally mystical and completely screwed up. It's almost like a pot dream or something. I mean, it's such a weird ending, but I love it because it's so... to me, it's so inspiring. So let's put that aside for the moment and say, if you're going to love a story from the Bible, that's a great one to love. And it's an easy one to read. And anybody can read Jonah in like 15 minutes. And you ought to if you've never read the story and try to sort it out yourself. That having been said, what happens in 2013, Greg, if the world doesn't come to an end?
Well, he simply will not answer that question. He says,
I'm asking you, what will happen in 2013 for you if the world doesn't come to an end?
I personally don't care. I just love this prophet, and I'm not religious myself. I just think the whole thing's cool, and, you know, I'm a religious skeptic. I just look at the Bible as totally cool literature. You know, I think it's the Hall of Fame of literature, and I just really enjoy it, you know, because it's like when you look at Genesis, okay, it totally contradicts itself, you know, line by line, but yet there's something to it that just is so cool, you know?
I completely agree. And if you love it that way, you ought to start digging into it in the original language, which makes it even cooler because, you know, as the Italian expression goes, the translator is always a traitor. And that's it's a handy expression. Because in English, you always have to make a decision what the word means. But in the original language, if you get to know some of those really key words, you can see there might be four or five meanings to every single passage. And then you've really then you've taken the blue pill, right? Larry is hanging on. He's, let's see, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines, Larry?
Yeah.
Hi, where are you going to take us?
Well, the police calls.
911 calls. A guy said that he called 911 to help his mom, and the police came and ransacked his house because he called 911.
That, you know, one of the things that a person a lot of times forgets, I could not remember, did he say his mother was sick?
That's what he said.
Okay, if I called you and said my mother was sick and gave you my address, you'd probably come to my house not knowing, you know, he did not say whether he gave her address.
Let's just assume he gave her address. Let's assume that then.
And then let's say, well, have we had a lot of calls from this guy about his mother? You know, and maybe she might have said, look, I'm getting tired of my son checking in on me. That has happened, you know, because sometimes people say, well, mom won't let me come to her house. I've had to go check on a man who is a friend of mine. His daughter called me and just insisted I go and check on him. And I went over and he was fine. He invited me in for coffee and we sat there and talked. You know, he never did ask me, why are you here? You know, it's just a friendly visit. And then I called his daughter up and said, your dad is fine. And now, was it you that had the problem with the location they were trying to track you down on the drunk driver one?
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought they just spent way too much time trying to isolate what intersection I was. I kept telling them where the driver was going. And so since the driver was driving, there really was no point to say where he had been.
Yeah.
The point was to tell him where he was going and to go stop him.
And sometimes the 911 operators get a little confused because she might have been wanting to actually have an officer, you know, meet you eye to eye because they may have had a call on that person before in another neighborhood.
Well, it didn't really matter. The point is that she became obsessed with it. She was, I mean, she just, you know, God bless her. I know it's a busy job and they make mistakes too, but to get so focused on what intersection I am driving past, as opposed to, I kept saying, this person's weaving all over the road. You got to find them. They're heading. She didn't get any information about the drunk driver. And finally, I just said, look, do you want to know about this or not? Because you're getting, you know, you're like filling out some form there when we really need to like snap into action because this guy's about to kill somebody. But I know 911 operators have their protocol too. I just thought that one was not helpful. First time caller line, Sean is in Syracuse on Coast to Coast AM. Sean?
Hey, what's up, Ian?
All right.
Hey, just want to wish everyone a happy holidays, and I wanted to know if you were going to go see The Spirit.
Bet I am, even though it's getting bad reviews.
Is it really?
Yeah, the first couple of reviews I read were not encouraging, but I'm big on, I actually bought a book about the life of Will Eisner, the creator of The Spirit, and I've been reading that a little bit, and then I bought a Spirit, the Frank Miller collection from the 80s or 90s, and that was cool. And so I'm all about The Spirit.
Frank Miller brings a whole new aspect to the comic book world, especially in the movies.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I love the stylized look of it. It's much more stylized than the comic book, which is even cooler that he's come up with a whole new take on it. So Spirit's opening up on Christmas Day, and you know I'll be following up on the air, and I'm sure we'll get a review or two on the air, too, on Coast to Coast AM. I admit it's a weakness, this whole comic book thing. Can't get it out of my system no matter how old I get. But that's where we leave it then for the last half hour. Is that all we got left? Well, holy smokes, we got to get back to these calls. And hang on, everybody. If you're on hold, we'll get to you before the top of the hour, I promise. Take a look at the blog if you missed crypto news from earlier in the show. You can find it at coasttocoastam.com. And coming up tomorrow night, Richie Kohler, one of the deep sea detectives, going after a Nazi sub. That's just in the first hour of a great show on Coast to Coast. I always love that tune, Bittersweet Symphony, and that obscure orchestral version of that Rolling Stones song, The Last Time, right, which they sample in that song. That's a perfect storm. And in a way, it's sort of the perfect metaphor for tomorrow night. Tomorrow night on Coast to Coast, we're in a book called Reality Check. Now, it's a business book. We're not scared of doing business books on Coast to Coast. We do them from time to time. When somebody does something that explores something more than just the nuts and bolts of business, but rather the futuristic aspect of how technology must exist in our minds first before we can ever put it out right in the streets in a way that it can be used and that people can profit from it. And so Guy Kawasaki has written a book ostensibly about Apple, but it's more than that. It's about how ideas come together. What is the magic of an idea? What are the ingredients? How do the planets line up to make something happen? And then, you know, in effect, we'll take it into the future. Where is the magic happening now? How can we put things together that don't belong, say, like the orchestral version of that Rolling Stones song the last time, and take that Monavani-like version of the last time and then turn it into something cool like that song we just played? It's all about creativity and the elusive, almost mythical nature of how we create. And what we will create in the future and how we will get there, where those great big ideas are waiting right now, if you only knew how to get to them. That's Reality Check coming up tomorrow on Coast to Coast AM with Ian Punnett. Filling in for George Norrie next, open lines on Coast to Coast. Just talking off the air with Kiris about the whole story going around that Eddie Murphy is going to be chosen to be the Riddler in the sequel to The Dark Knight. And I don't know. I think he can do that. I actually think that would work. And I think he's actor enough to do it. I don't know whether that's where they're headed. I did hear Rachel Weisz's name being discussed for Catwoman. She's not a household name, but she's a face you're going to find familiar. I think she'd be an interesting choice for Catwoman, too, if she's, you know, if she can do what Heath Ledger did with Joker. And I'm telling you, it's just one of the greatest performances I've ever seen. Steve is in Long Beach, California on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines for the rest of this hour. Steve?
Hi, Ian. About John Lennon, I don't know, but I don't think that he actually sold his soul to the devil. But maybe by chance he was in a parallel world, because there is a record on a label called Swan. And if you ever saw the film Phantom of the Paradise, the character played by Paul Williams is called Swan. And he's like the guy that signs you up with the devil, you know.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that. So the record that's on Swan, though, that was the first Beatles record.
It was one of the first ones in the U.S.
Right. Because it was VJ and Swan, they were the ones that got the contract, because at the time Capitol Records wasn't interested, and then they said, oh, nope, yeah, we want it.
so that's one of the things that's strange about that. And about Paul McCartney, I think he might have towered at one point, maybe found something that came through time, like there's a mention on the back of Sgt. Pepper where it says, thanks the Apple. And this is before Apple is created or they start the Apple Industries. And before that, they were managed by a company called NEMS, which Brian Epstein's company.
Right.
And if he did, if you ever seen the motion picture, Give My Regards to Broad Street?
Never have, but I know what you're talking about.
There's a part of the film where he goes to Tower Bridge and talks to this old guy and this monkey. And there's like where it's editing back and forth like he's seeing something, and the old man is telling him something like he was like maybe H.G. Wells, you know, of a time machine, and he keeps looking at him like, what's happening here, you know?
Interesting.
He tried to rewrite his life again, you know, and maybe the clue thing is that the things that were by artists' mistakes or actualities appear on the record covers and on the the Matrix. The Matrix is about Apple Records. There's a point in time on the Matrixes, I collect a lot of records, and on the Matrixes it shows at one point where there's a beginning point, and then there's a pivotal point, like when they were doing Let It Be, Get Back, and then there's an end point when it's like where the mastations of the record industry forward and back, what's released and what occurs to them. Sometimes some records are withdrawn and then reissued or re-recorded or redubbed for certain reasons that can cause effect upon the artist that maybe they think, well, I didn't like that, or we're going to release that ahead of time in the U.S. And back in time in the U.K.
I got to be honest with you, I'm having a hard time following that. Maybe I'm just getting tired, but I'll have to go back and stream link and go back in time and listen to that conversation again and try to sort that out. I think I got it, but in the end, I think you come back to where I was at the beginning, which is that John Lennon did not make a deal with the devil, very likely. Last week's guest had that book out called The Lennon Prophecy. If you want to find out more about that, I think it was LennonProphecy.com, or you can look him up at coasttocoastam.com. Judy is in Houston. Judy?
Hello. Fascinating show. I wanted to bring up the idea about laboratory development of cross species, like killer bees.
Okay.
You know, then they accidentally are let loose.
Right.
And, and then they find their own habitats. Maybe this is some merit to the swamp man.
In Arkansas, right.
Just on a lighter note, I dated a guy that reminded me of from Texas City.
He smelled that bad, is what you're saying.
Personality-wise.
Or acted that bad. Well, I'm glad to know you're out of that relationship, even if he's not out of the swamp. So thank you so much for that. And let's see, we got a couple other people hanging on. Mary is in Toronto, Canada, on Coast to Coast. Mary?
Well, hi, Ian.
Hi.
I might be able to shed some light on your clock slowing down.
Okay, now, my clock sped up, which is weird. What happened, I have an atomic clock, which is linked, you know, to that atomic transmitter building, wherever that is, and it supposedly syncs me up to, you know, Greenwich and all the other, to the second. You know, I'm supposed to have exact time for my time zone, and it jumped 2 minutes. It's the second time this has happened where it's just jumped ahead spontaneously 2 minutes, and I don't understand it.
And the clock is in the same location?
Yeah, it never moved. It's just up there on the wall.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my explanation, I think, would apply whether it speeds up or slows down.
Okay.
There might be some quirk about your specific geographical location or the immediate environment of the clock that alters the gravitational field near the clock from time to time, increasing the gravitational field near the clock slightly and thereby slowing down time in that location by or speeding up time in that location by a minute.
What would I have around here that might increase or decrease the gravitational field around the atomic clock?
Well, have you got anything that's electromagnetic nearby?
Like?
I don't know. I'm no physicist.
Well, I don't know. See, I don't know. I don't even know what to look for. I have a candle. I'm in my studio right now. I have a very low-tech room. So the atomic clock, just to get an idea, it's from, if I had to draw a dotted line from my eyes to the wall, it's probably 7 feet from my face to the face of the clock. And it's up about 6 feet. It's like the top of a door jamb, so maybe 7 feet. And then that's it. It's the only thing around it is a foam from.
So is that near the ceiling?
Well, it's 2 feet from the ceiling, yeah.
Well, what's above your room?
Probably dead squirrels. It's an attic.
Well, I'm just repeating an idea that I heard on another radio interview where in a black hole, I think light slows down, like light stops effectively.
Right.
And it's connected somehow to and then time stops as well. When light stops, time stops. And so I'm connecting it to some.
I love that idea. Don't get me wrong. I would love nothing more than to tell people, hey, don't go in that studio. There's a black hole in there. You might get sucked in. I am so game. It might explain the dead squirrels in my attic. I'm so good with there being a black hole. I'm just trying to see how whether I could control it. You know, whether there's a way then if I really do have like a bend in this, space-time continuum around my atomic clock. How do I take advantage of that?
If you can find the source of the electromagnetic field or the geographical quirk in the ground below your building there, then you can get control of it.
I think we end up back at the old Indian burial ground theory. I think that maybe the only thing I can explain. That's the only thing I can't imagine where else is going on. But I really appreciate that idea. I love that. Could be. If I could only imagine, if I can only see interdimensionally what's happening right now around my atomic clock. I checked the battery. The battery's good. It just literally jumped ahead 2 minutes and has remained 2 minutes ahead exactly from where we are right now. So, again, maybe I'm 2 minutes into the future and, 2 minutes and 2 hours if I count the time zone difference between me and David, who's in California. David?
Yes. Ian, how are you?
Good. Open lines. Go ahead.
Hi, I was just wanting to share an experience that I had with practicing Gematria, like the Kabbalah,
right,
and how it relates to Freemasonry.
Right, and there's a lot of talk about that in studies of Freemasonry. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I don't think this really, I don't know if it has any direct tie to Freemasonry, but if you add in the English Gematria, if you add, Lucifer and Jesus, they're the same.
What do you mean by that?
Well, that means that they're carrying numbers are broken. I'm nervous, man. When you break down, the word.
I liked your nervous laugh there. That was a great laugh.
Thanks, man.
But what do you mean when you add up, you're talking about if you're adding up the numeric value of the name Jesus and Lucifer?
Yeah. See, the numbers, they carry the same vibration. So I think there's identity, something identical with those words, that have the same numerical vibration. But it also says in Revelations that, Jesus said that I am the seed of David and I am the morning star, which means Lucifer, So, and heaven and Satan, when you break down the numbers in the English Gematria, it's the same. So,
I hadn't heard that because, the numeric value in Greek or Hebrew is really what we're talking about. English, we don't have a tradition of assigning a numeric value to letters in the same way that words were anciently. So where we get the word, we get the number of the beast was not based on the word Lucifer. The number of the beast, it was based on the total value of the letters in Caesar Nero. And so, at least that's what most Bible scholars would argue. That's where you get the numeric value of 666, or as some people think, it's actually 616. But either way, interesting. Okay, hadn't thought about that. And I don't think of Jesus as the same thing as Lucifer, but I see what you're saying in Revelation, no S. Let's go to Ziggy in Canada on Coast to Coast. Ziggy?
Hey there, Ian. How are you doing?
Good. Time's running out here, so let's get you on real quick.
Okay, first of all, Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Thank you and you.
Thank you. I was just wondering, is there any chance that you or George could have a guest to talk about dreams?
Well, George did a dream show not too long ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago. Go back in the stream link and listen for that. And I do one, two or three times a year.
Okay. Can I make one quick point if I could?
Sure.
Okay. Why do people say happy holidays or season greens? Isn't it that the true theme is of saying Merry Christmas?
Well, you have
everyone's entitled to their opinion about what they want to say, but...
Right. Well, in a pluralistic society, there's more than just one religious holiday to the season.
Right.
So that's when you say happy holidays for the three different... holidays that are often celebrated simultaneously in the month of December, that covers everybody. Now, but once we know, if you knew individually that somebody were Jewish, I hope you would say, by the way, happy Hanukkah.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the thing is, when I say Merry Christmas, how do you spell Christmas, though? CHRIST, and then you stop because it's the birth of Christ, is it not?
Right. So your point?
My point is, why do people say happy holidays? It's not a holiday. It's
sure
not,
it is.
Well, it is a holiday, yes. But the thing is, it's not really a holiday, you know?
No, it's a holiday. It's a holiday for
it's
me.
It's the birth of our Christ, is it not?
That's a holiday.
That's a holiday.
Right, it's a holy day, right? That's where we get the word holiday, from holy day.
Well, that makes sense, but I just was wondering, it just makes more sense if people would say Merry Christmas.
I realize that, but if you know somebody's Christian, you say Merry Christmas, but if you don't and you want to just be generic, you say Happy Holidays, which is still saying Happy Holy Days, right? You're still saying somebody is a, you're still wishing them a holy day, but I think that's how that works. Tyrone is in Madison, Wisconsin, where they got a little inclement weather, as I understand it today. Tyrone?
What an honor to be on with you, Ian.
You're nice to say that.
Yeah, we got a few snowdrops here.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to tell a happy story here towards the end about an angel in disguise, is what I believe.
All right.
I ran into some trouble about 10 years ago, down on my luck. I ended up homeless. And a friend of mine gave me a car. It wasn't a very good car, however.
Any port in the storm.
Yeah. I stopped at a payphone to make a phone call and made the call and attempted to start this car, and it would not do anything. So, of course, I popped the hood and checked the battery. Nothing going on there. Couldn't find anything. Got back in the driver's seat and said a prayer. Please let this car start. I need this car. It's my life. You know, I was living out of the car and had all my belongings in there, and I just gotten a job and need this car to get to work. So I said the prayer and turned the key again, and nothing happened. So I got out, looked under the hood again, and all of a sudden I noticed a young lady standing to my right, and I looked at her, and she was absolutely the most beautiful person that you could ever lay your eyes on. And she asked me if I needed some help. So I asked her if she knew about cars. And she replied, she's not sure. She said, maybe it's just a wire you have loose. So I looked down at the engine real quick for a half a second and looked back. And she was gone. She had vanished. So I looked all around the parking lot and didn't see her at all. So I got back in the car, tried to start it again. Nothing happened. I got out, looked under the hood, and I saw a wire that was loose. So I put it to the closest spot that I thought it might go into.
Right.
Got back into the car, and it started right up.
Love that. That's very cool. And let's just say then, Angel, yes, miracle. Always, anything's a miracle if it's an amazing thing to see. That's all miracle means. It's just a little thing to see. So you had one of those miracle experiences. And I might add, Tyrone, anytime a beautiful woman says, do you need help? The answer is always yes, right? You always appreciate that. And everybody then, if it applies to you, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. Otherwise, any holiday you're celebrating, make the most of it. Tomorrow night, great show. Listen for that. Both of those guests, you'll find out more at coasttocoastam.com. Deus te amat, and I do too.